Welcome to the Sterile Aware Podcast. Listen in as our host Charlie Webb speaks with the nation's leading experts on topics surrounding healthcare-associated infections and the sterile delivery of medical devices to the patient. The Sterile Aware Podcast will keep you up to date on the latest news on emerging technologies and techniques to better manage healthcare-associated infections. On episodes ahead, we will also keep you up to date with all the exciting activities surrounding the Sterile Aware mission for greater patient safety. Now, here is your host, Charlie Webb.
This is Charlie Webb, broadcasting here on the beautiful Central California coast. You're listening to the Sterile Aware Podcast. Well, thank you, listeners, for joining me for another episode. We continue to add episodes as our little podcast grows. Many of you know me from Spot Radio for medical device packaging. That's a 5-year run on that little podcast. So we're sort of new here, but we're getting the listeners join us. Please, I ask you to pass the word about this little podcast. Well, it's all about patient safety here at Sterile Aware, the connection to a medical device, and the connection really to the patient through a healthcare facility and clinic. One thing that I made a promise that I was going to really talk about products in the industry. You know, it's kind of one of my pet peeves. I'm the president of Vanderstall Scientific. We're a medical device packaging machine company. That's my day gig. And it's always bothered me that a lot of publications, media, won't talk to companies unless they're an advertiser. And, you know, you really wonder, is that an ethical viewpoint? You know, from us, we never charge anyone to ever be part of this podcast. This is a not-for-profit endeavor. So it's hard for us to imagine that we would skew, or media would skew, discussions about products that could serve their market only whether or not they're an advertiser. It's crazy. Well, that doesn't happen here. If you have a product that's helping the environmental connection to patient sterility, any of the things that we talk about here, sterile processing departments, all of it, we'd love to have you on the show. The goal here is to really talk about what's available, make hospital EVS groups and sterile processing departments aware of new technology. I think a lot of times those used to be the industry magazines would circulate through facilities. A lot of them don't even look at those anymore now that we're in deep into the digital age, right? So as I was scrolling through LinkedIn, I came across a really cool product. It's called the Nimbus. You know, one of the challenges, and from my own experience laying in a hospital bed myself last summer, and seeing all of the contact, the connections that the clinicians and healthcare personnel were interacting with my room, I was shocked. Gosh, you just can't believe it. You know, it's funny. I always talk about the sandwich shop where you stand in line there to get your sandwich made, and the operator first, before she or he takes your order, they run cash, dirty bills, touch a dirty cash register. And then they come back and they put gloves on the hand. Well, unfortunately, those gloves were the ones that were touching the bills and the cash register. They don't understand the sort of change dynamic that each case, if you like, has to replace those gloves, or they have no value. So we see so many of these breaches, and nobody's really exempt from these problems. I mean, I know the EVS teams have a very strong protocol, but those are easily missed. We know that. I mean, the CDC says about 50% of a room's surface is really disinfected. So we know that there's a huge, huge breach, and that's between patient to patient. So when they're doing terminal cleaning, it really may not be terminal cleaning. So again, as I was scrolling through LinkedIn, I came across this cool product. As I say, it was the Nimbus. And I reached out to Peter Hoff and asked him if he would be on a podcast with me and explain how this product works. And this whole room system that they have. It's really a little robot at the end of the day. So I got him on the phone here, and I want him to explain and for us to have a discussion a little bit about this technology. It's cool, amazing stuff. I really hope it propagates through the industry. You know, as we get more and more busy, as budget cuts are a reality, we need to look at efficient ways for us to manage those environments. And this is true for any device's journey through a healthcare facility, everything from the SPD, EVS, clinicians, surgical suites. We need to see how that surgical part, device, implant connects with that journey. And it's been a real challenge. And I know firsthand getting an infection from a scope last summer that almost killed me. I'm pretty much very keen. I got a lot of skin in the game, you might say. So let's get him on the phone. Let's chat with him. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining me today. I can't wait to hear more about this cool technology.
Hi, Charlie. Enjoy your work. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much. Well, let's jump right in here. What is hypochlorous acid?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's hypochlorous acid is a powerhouse. It is the most powerful oxidant in the chlorine family. It's up to 200 times more powerful than bleach. So we're able to maintain the efficacy and only use small amounts of it. It's sporicidal, it's bactericidal, virucidal, fungicidal, really effective from a disinfectant perspective. But the key with it is it's safe. It's non-toxic to humans. It's environmentally safe and naturally occurring. And it's pH neutral. So what sets it apart from bleach and some of the other disinfectants out there is it's very gentle on equipment and furniture. So it's a fantastic alternative to many of those harsh, toxic chemicals that are commonly used in healthcare today.
Now I'm thinking like, just going to a swimming pool analogy here, where we're using chlorine, which I think is sodium hypochloride, which is an oxidizer. And so oxidizers can tend to be rough on plastics and other material. So how is this different? It's not corrosive or an oxidizer?
Right. It comes down to the pH level. So because it's a pH neutral, you harness the power of the disinfectant part of the hypochlorous acid, but the pH neutral keeps it gentle and non-caustic to equipment and furniture, any surfaces really.
It's cool. Now as you probably know, I'm on the medical device manufacturing side of packaging. So Sterile Aware is somewhat a new landscape for me as I learn more about the disinfectant side and hospitals and clinics. But, you know, this hasn't come into my nomenclature. I'm surprised. I haven't heard the term before. Is it somewhat new to the industry?
It's actually not new, but what's interesting about it is it's present in both of us right now. So our white blood cells produce hypochlorous acid to fight off infections. It's actually one of the oldest disinfectants out there. It's FDA approved for wound care. It was used during World War I on the battlefield for wound care. It's a very effective food safe sanitizer. It's used in agriculture and our water treatment, drinking water, skincare products. So it has a variety of uses because it's so safe. One of the challenges with it, however, is it has a poor shelf life. Mm. So historically, it's been difficult and expensive to make and maintain a stable version of it. It's either required an on-site generator to produce, which has some administrative challenges with it and certainly some upfront cost, or expensive RTU-type products. There are some tablet versions out there, but those require mixing and diluting, and now we're adding more risk for error into the equation. Mm. So, and also, that, as I mentioned before, that pH is really important. So we developed a patented point of use cap that separates the dry chemistry from especially pH balanced water. And the benefit of doing that is separated like that, the shelf life is indefinite. So it makes it easy for us to store and ship, makes it easy for customers to have on hand. And then to activate it when you're ready to use it, you simply plunge the cap, shake the bottle. There's no mixing or measuring or exposure to chemicals. And at that point, you're getting the ideal parts per million for maximum efficacy.
So I watched the very edifying video this morning. And if you look on the whatever podcast platform you're listening to today, you can take a peek down there. I'm going to put a link down there so our listeners can look at that later on. But, you know, my concern would be, I mean, I'm playing the devil's advocate a little bit here, but when we're reducing I'm seeing the vapor leave the containment area, the room, how exactly does that process work? And how do we know that we've reached a residual ambient environment where humans are safe to walk back into the room? How does that process work?
Yeah, so the system itself, the Nimbus system, has a humidifier. So it's going to fog the hypochlorous acid in the room, which again is a very safe chemistry. We do block the air return vent and the smoke detector, but that is more of not a safety situation, but just to try to keep the concentration of fog in the room. Mm-hmm. So we're getting 100% of the surfaces. But also contain another patented part of the Nimbus system. There's a dehumidifier and an air scrubber in that same unit. So we're going to fog the room, get that disinfectant across 100% of the surfaces, and then we're going to dehumidify. We're going to pull all of that moisture out and scrub the air. And immediately at that point, that room is ready for reentry. So we know it's very safe. It's below the OSHA limits. We had to go through all of that testing. And what it does is free up that room, to your point, other than or unlike the other vapor technologies that are out there, this is immediately ready for room use.
And so, you know, comparing it to other sterilants like UV, hydrogen peroxide vapor, what are the upsides? I mean, I guess I can answer some of those. UV, we have a shadowing issue, I suppose, could be a yep. problem. And hydrogen peroxide, a more of an aggressive substance that's probably a little more tricky to manage. Is that the main pushback?
Yeah, so I think what you're going to find with it is, unlike UV, it's an EPA-registered hospital-grade disinfectant. UV doesn't have those same standards and criteria that they have to abide by, but certainly we do. Hydrogen peroxide does as well, being a chemical. But we're also getting 100% of that surface coverage. So exactly like you talked about, there's no limitations for shadowing or distance like UV has. We know we're getting every nook and cranny in that room every time. And then the additional part of it is really the efficiency that's gained. So this is a fully automated system. There's no repositioning. There's no risk of pathogen transfer having to go back in that room. And while the unit is running, that EVS tech is now freed up to complete other tasks, to prepare the next room perhaps for Nimbus use or complete a daily clean, which is really a workforce multiplier for many EVS teams across the country that are short-staffed right now.
You know, when you look, I've been almost 30-year innovator in medical device packaging systems, before that in surgical devices. So I've had to ride along the adoption curves of several devices. Sometimes I was heavy. In fact, one of the devices I developed and patented 20 years ago is just now starting to see market readiness, I guess you would say. You know, these are challenges where there's several types of biases that we have to deal with. And, you know, what we've always done around here, bias is a strong one. You know, how do you reach a clinic or user that is a candidate for your product and say, you know, I know this is the way you've done it, but we need to turn your attention over here and understand that there's new ways. I mean, adoption curves in healthcare are a funny, tricky, interesting thing to monitor. Imagine you guys are bumping up against this as well, yeah?
Yeah, it's a massive challenge, right? The status quo, that relentless status quo that we come up against. And I think what we're challenged with here is the other option, other than adopting technology to help with some of these tasks, is trying to modify human behavior. But that is really difficult to achieve, and it's extremely difficult to sustain. So we often will see initial improvement when we focus on something, maybe hand washing, right? And you see a spike and everyone's doing a great job. The focus tends to move on to something else, and we tend to backslide to the baseline. So once we take our eye off that, it tends to backslide to that initial baseline. So the other challenge with this is the group that we're expecting to improve, to do this work that is so vital, and it's truly life or death, right? When you're talking about HAIs, I have so much empathy and gratitude for EVS workers across the country for what they went through during the pandemic. Mm. But unfortunately, we're seeing a persistent EVS shortage and turnover. And you have a group that is understaffed, underappreciated, oftentimes underpaid and undersupported, and they are under tremendous time pressure to get those rooms turned over quickly. And that's an extremely challenging environment to achieve and sustain change when lives are on the line. So we're not talking about replacing the EVS worker here. They're still critical to success. But let's automate some of those mundane tasks to allow them to focus more on the tasks that require their judgment and require human intervention. Let's give them the tools to be successful.
And I think there's, you know, a tricky conversation that I've had several times is when we talk about, you know, the human failures, that it almost feels unfair to talk about it. We do understand that this is particularly true in the SPD department of hospitals, underappreciated, as you said, underpaid for sure. And yet we need to have a reliable outcome. And so it's really up to us technologists to develop technology that really sort of sees. I mean, we saw it back in the 1970s, late 70s, early 80s. And I almost hate to use this term because I always get beat up for this. It wasn't my term, but McDonald's came up with a system that was really centered around the nomenclature of dummying down a system. And so what they found is that even at that simple point of sale for selling hamburgers and french fries, that they literally changed the landscape of how the cashier interacted with the cash register. And so they simply would put a picture of a hamburger. Someone wants a hamburger, you push the hamburger button. And, you know, this set off another sort of vision of human connection to where, you know, we're not saying that people can't do certain functions, that we're saying that in the stress of a day and 6 hours into your shift, humans have, they tire and there's failures according to this demanding workflow. This is certainly the case in hospitals and clinics. So it's really up to us in technology. And this is why I was so excited when I came across you on LinkedIn, to be able to have systems that aid those humans. About 20 years ago, I patented a medical device packaging machine that required and the workflow basically worked like this. You would seal pouches throughout the day, and then you would have to peel them apart through a destructive test using this ASTM F88 standard and to see that you're still engendering good solid seals. Well, there was too many holes in it. It wasn't being performed. There was no record of it. And so medical devices were reaching the patient's bedside, literally falling out of the bags and pouches because they were poorly sealed. So I developed and patented a system that has a built-in test laboratory on the machine itself, the sealing machine itself, that required the operator to stop, perform a test in whatever quality assurance intervals. They could either do it every Wednesday at 2 o'clock, or they could do it every 1,000 seals, but it would force the machine to stop and not move forward until, as it is a gating, a firewall, if you like, in order to make sure that that process is done. As a result of that, we had so much feedback over the last 20 years. This particular machine at my day job was one of our main sellers. And it's because we aren't taking the human out wholly, but we're saying, you know, can we help you with scheduling? Hey, this morning I used an alarm clock. Does that make me stupid? Of course not. When we have these, you know, things that help us add to a process to assure, and, you know, when we're in a critical process of cleaning a patient's room and we understand that the EVS staff are very taxed, why not provide a tool that really helps? I mean, I spent last August, I was in the hospital for a few weeks, and I watched in real time, and being somebody in sterile packaging, to have this front row seat of seeing how many failures there were in wipe downs and patient to clinician touch. All of these points was so egregious and outrageous that anything that we can do, human feelings aside, we really need to move forward with these, and they work together. And as you alluded to, this isn't meant to replace the EVS. This is really something as a tool, a mop, really, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as you look at this, the other phrase I like to think of is we're all human. Humans are fallible, right? As you said, humans make mistakes. It's proven out time after time, study after study. A manual-only approach is doomed to fail at some point.
Yeah.
And we see those studies, I know you're familiar with them, but you know, 50% or less of room services are effectively disinfected between patients. And studies showing significant risk of pathogen transfer using wipes. And ultimately, it comes down to you are 2 times more likely to contract an infection if the previous patient was colonized or infected. So no matter how good the disinfectant is, it's useless if it's not applied correctly. So if we can automate some of these processes and take that off the plate of the EVS team, now they can focus on the things that do require judgment, that do require that human interaction. So it really is a tool that should help them be more successful, help reduce infections across the healthcare system, and improve patient outcomes.
Yeah. You know, I oversee 2 17025 laboratories. We have an empirical laboratory, and we also have a calibration lab. And everything that I do is a matter of record. You know, so how do we know that we've achieved something? We're calibrating a piece of medical equipment that's going to be validated. We need to understand, we have to see a metric that is attached to typically a machine. In other words, a meter. So we can't say, yeah, you know, it's not philosophy in a laboratory, right? It's hard science. Mm-hmm. So we're saying that if we're measuring temperature at a platen, or we're measuring force with a FoodTech meter, that we know exactly how much force is being applied, 100 newtons of force at the ceiling platen. And then we have a meter that backs it up. We record that data, the date, the time, the operator. So in our world, we need to have an understanding of, hey, are we making progress? How do you record? How do you understand whether or not you're reaching that 100% of room surfaces when you're gone through this contamination, decontamination cycle?
Yeah. So when we bring it on site, that's one of the first question we usually get is how do we know it's getting everywhere in that room? And we use chlorine strips to test that and show that. So we will take those strips and put them all around the room. We'll give them to the hospital staff and tell them, put them wherever you want, put them under the bed, put them on the far wall, put them in the attached bathroom, anywhere you want. will run a cycle, and those strips will turn blue if they're exposed to chlorine, if they're exposed to the hypochlorous acid. So we can ensure that we're getting coverage everywhere. And it's actually the same way that we test the units up front and commission them for use. As you know, most hospital rooms aren't one size, right? There are many different varieties of hospital rooms, which may require a slightly different recipe for us to make sure we're getting that 100% coverage. So we will customize the recipe for that specific type of hospital room, and we'll do that testing to commission the unit to make sure we're getting 100% coverage and getting every nook and cranny in that room.
So how do you, so who's a candidate for this device? I mean, is this, I guess at a hospital, are you just relegating its use to high risk scenarios or rooms, or is this something that's broadly used across hospitals and clinics?
Yeah, the general answer to that is it really designed for acute care, the Nimbus automated unit. But we do have a Stratus unit that is a handheld targeted fogger, same hypochlorous acid, microburst hypochlorous acid. That one is great for ambulatory surgery centers, outpatient clinics, long-term care, any larger open areas as well. And where we've really had good luck with that is the between case clean and disinfection in the OR. Time is so important there. And we recently launched some OR protocols for between case cleaning. So in just 2 minutes, you're able to get this same type of advanced disinfection that really has never been available before. Most ORs are doing, or surgery centers are doing, a terminal clean at the end of the day, which is a great benefit to that first patient of the day. However, as the day goes on and more surgery cases go up, the bioburden tends to raise. And it's not going to be reset until the end of the day. So this allows a very quick 2-minute application between cases to help reduce the risk of SSI. I think on a broad level, Charlie, we see customers kind of break down into two groups. And the ones that are most likely to adopt this are the ones that are striving for zero infection, right? They want to be proactive. They're focused on continual improvement. And I had a healthcare administrator put it to me one time. An EVS is the first step. This environmental clean is a critical first step in patient care for the next patient. Mm-hmm. It's not simply cleaning and housekeeping after the last patient. Mm-hmm. And that is, there is a hard divide there in the market with healthcare facilities. Someone who views it as the first vital step in patient care is likely to invest in tools to help these EVS teams and infection prevention strategy be more successful.
Just so our listeners can understand, you know, I don't understand, are these leased, or the hospitals and clinics own your equipment? How many of these devices are running, and what does it look like when you roll the device into the room? I see on the video that, again, that I'm sharing on the description, that there's a iPad-like tablet that starts the process out. So just give us kind of the overview of how the device is put in and what its workflow looks like in a clinic or hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we said, we can't replace the EVS worker, but what we are is a tool for them. So we still, that EVS worker is still going to enter the room. They're still going to wipe the visible debris, get rid of that gross debris in any visible soiled areas. They're going to strip the bed. They're going to empty the trash. But then at that point, they're ready for Nimbus deployment. So we will have them cover, as I said before, those air vents and smoke detectors. We have them open the curtain and open the drawers and hang the call button, because any surface that is exposed is going to get disinfected. At that point, the tablet is what they use to operate it. Charlie, you could operate it without any training today. It's very simple. That was our goal, was to make it simple for that EVS worker to use. They start it, and as I said, they can now move on to prepping the next room or doing some other EVS tasks while this system is running. So it does free up their time as well, so improving efficiency. And then at the end, come back in the room. They're going to take the covers down. They're going to remake the bed. They're going to put the trash liners back in and close everything up. They're going to mop out, and they're on to the next task. So it's a very easy process for them to do, and helps aid that room turnover time. And you asked a question earlier about how do they acquire these products. We recognize 2022 was a tough year for hospitals. I think I read an article that called it the worst operating year ever for healthcare. So. That's the reason we've come up with a no capital model for our customers. We want hospitals to be able to better protect their patients and staff today without the long capital budget process. We backslid. We've made a lot of gains in infection prevention, but we backslid a little bit during COVID. We gave away some of those gains. We've seen things like CORIS take hold. We want to be able to help and get these tools in the hands of as many hospitals as we can, as fast as we can. So there's options here that doesn't require that long budget process for them to get this implemented quickly.
Yeah, that's important. Budgets. I mean, we just in our, my day job, we sell into hospitals, but it's not our normal call point. And the pushback we get on budget and the layers of procurement decision makes it a difficult terrain for people to market into. Back in my young days, in my 20s, fresh out of college, I was a microsurgical sales guy traveling around. And it was always the biggest challenge. Nobody wanted to try to break that rampart into hospitals because it's so difficult. And unfortunately, oftentimes these antiquated systems are so fortified that it makes it difficult. And again, talking about that adoption curve, those adoption curve shapes just go to hell in a minute when you are trying to sell into a buying structure that has things like utilization review, where you're actually rewarded for not procuring product. So it's a tough one to sell to. Yeah. But the technology is great. You know, I'm on one of the Kilmer Innovations and Packaging Groups. I'm the PM on one of the groups. And one of the other groups is doing a thing called the glitter bug, where they have this invisible material on their hands and they're able to sort of track where the touch points are and where they see the clusters of where, you know, things are being touched and where the humans flow. How does that, the sort of hand-touching piece, have you done any evaluation in terms of hotspots, or is that even an issue since you're doing more of a global disinfectant?
Yeah. So with the goal of getting and being able to achieve 100% of the surfaces, it's less targeted when we're talking about that whole room disinfection, but we do swab testing, and that's part of the way that we prove out, you know, that our system is more effective than the manual only approach or some other technology that the hospital might be using currently. And we'll be able to swab and send those in and show that actual reduction in pathogens. So it's a better test than ATP testing. But it really, I mean, people want to see, you know, the rubber meet the road, right? Where are those results? Are we reducing that bioburden? And we love that opportunity to come in and help them identify areas for improvement.
That's so cool. And as I say, I saw you guys on LinkedIn and watched the video, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is fantastic. A friend of mine, Karen Gula, she has a product for drapes where they're, you know, they're talking about having some of the room divider drapes that hang there for over a year without being replaced. And there's so many touch points that just are not being addressed. And with budgets and staff shortages and aggregate all of those problems, it becomes real challenging. So how big is your reach right now? Maybe tell me a little bit about the launch of the product. How far are you into this, and what's the outlook like?
Sure. Yeah. So the Nimbus unit, that whole room automated system, was launched in 2020. So we've gotten and are continue to get traction with that unit. And then the Stratus unit was actually launched earlier this year with that target focused on the OR and expanding markets. So really, the Nimbus were designed for those patient discharges, as we talked about. Really the high risk. We think about the patient or the pathogen. So any of those high risk rooms, when it comes to the pathogen of C. diff or any of those challenging pathogens, we want to be able to use this to get a thorough disinfection before admitting the next patient to that room. But the other area that we've seen this expand to is where we have immunocompromised patients and trying to keep the bioburden down. So we're talking burn units and oncology and ICU, those high-risk patients. What are we doing to ensure that we've done and reduced that bioburden as much as we can to help protect those patients? So we've seen good expansion and good adoption there. Stratus, that the handheld unit, that's also great in hospitals, not outside of the OR, when we're talking about things like the emergency department and dialysis. And I had a customer tell me recently, an ER staff member, they love using that. They actually house the Stratus in ER, and it gives them peace of mind that they're protecting themselves along with that following patient by doing this. So I think it's a great investment in the technology for healthcare workers that may be a little burnt out and maybe a little disenfranchised after the pandemic, since they were on the front line, to give them some of these tools to help protect themselves as well.
And also cases where there's quick turns. My mind sort of wanders a little bit and wonder if the Stratus would be a candidate for like an ambulance or something.
Absolutely. So we recently expanded into ambulances with one customer, and it's been a hit because of how quick and easy it is for them to be able to get that disinfection.
So it sounds safe, and now we just need to convince more to jump on board. So in the podcast description today, I'm going to put all your links on there. Well, any sort of closing thoughts about the process before I turn you loose today?
I'll give you one more, I think, that is overlooked in healthcare today, and it's the toxicity of the chemicals that are used. And that toxicity is to the healthcare workers using it. It's to the environment. And we see it with the surfaces as well, as it breaks down equipment. Those are real concerns and major concerns that are out there. And I think what's really concerning is the risk of that long-term exposure. There are studies that have shown the association between some of these disinfectants and an increased risk of developing respiratory disease like COPD. So how can we get the efficacy we need in healthcare, but reduce those safety risks for our healthcare workers? And hypochlorous acid is I think that answer, because of how safe it is. It maintains that efficacy, but I think it's very concerning when we talk about exposure to these healthcare workers long-term to all of these chemicals, and we know that's bad for the environment. So let's find a better, cleaner way to do it.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, even in the SPD department, ETO has been under fire forever. It's challenging when we're trying to put something, it's just really sort of a chemo would be a good analysis, where we're trying to aggressively kill something, but not kill the containment system that has the pathogen or the disease. And so I think that's the biggest challenge. And a lot of the surface connections with those wipe downs can be problematic. Those can be, especially if they're being put into an aerosol into the room, those are challenging. So we need to keep the staff safe and try to do the right thing for the patient ahead. And I like what you said, that that sort of mindset becomes really important. We're not just cleaning behind us, we're cleaning ahead of us. And that little just different mindset, I think, is really important for the EVS staff to understand that we're looking forward to not getting rid of that. And although it seems like a minor bit of nomenclature, it really indeed is a different frame of mind.
Absolutely.
Well, such cool, amazing tech. As I mentioned to you, Peter, I was scrolling through LinkedIn the other day, being nosy as most of us LinkedIn scrollers are, and curious. Want to see what's happening in the industry. I love new technology. I love innovation. And this really caught my eye. So I linked over, watched the video, and I'm like, yes, it's exactly what the industry needs. And I was hoping that I could get you on the podcast. I'm so glad that you came over here and did that today. You know, innovation is so important in our industry right now. Hospitals are famously taxed on their budgets, much more so. And the future doesn't look so great moving forward. So I encourage companies that have new technology to reach out to me so we can chat about them. And also, listeners, I encourage you, when you hear about these amazing technologies, please move those up the food chain to that mahogany desk that makes the decisions, and let them know about this technology being available. Because it's difficult for companies who are pushing a new technology. There's a lot of pushback based on, we've already do it this way, biases and so on. So it really helps when that comes within an organization to help sell and to propagate these life-changing, life-saving technologies into hospitals and clinics. So please do that. Well, Peter, thanks so much for hanging out with me today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and I can't wait to have you back on the next one so we can have a follow-up about the Nimbus.
I look forward to it. Thanks for your time, Charlie.
Thanks for coming, Peter. Well, Sterile Aware listeners, thanks so much for hanging out with me today. Please pass the word along about our little podcast. We are growing bit by bit, and it's always exciting to see new listeners join us. Thanks so much for hanging out with me today. This is Charlie Webb, and you've been listening to the Sterile Aware Podcast.
The Sterile Aware Podcast is made possible by the generous support from our corporate sponsor, Vanderstall Scientific, executive producer Lisa Wasberg, director of media services Hector Garcia, editing and audio by Joel and our friends at East Coast Studio. And this is Jonathan Lockwood saying thank you for listening in. And please join us on the next episode of the Sterile Aware Podcast.